I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. With the state's primary election less than a month away, two of the three Democratic candidates for governor of Maryland faced off Tuesday night in their second televised debate. Attorney General Doug Gansler and Montgomery County Delegate Heather Mazier handled questions on everything from education to the environment. Notably missing from the discussion, Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. An empty podium marked his absence. And what do we think of that? You're invited to call us this hour to tell us what you think about Brown's no-show and what his opponents, Gansler and Mazier, had to say on the issues. Midday Politics with Melissa Deckman of Washington College and Barry Raskovar of Political Maryland starts after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everyone. Dan Rodericks here on WYPR out of Baltimore, WYPF, Frederick, Hagerstown, WYPO, serving the Ocean City area and the eastern shore of Maryland, and we're streaming live to you through WYPR.org. However you're listening, we thank you for making Midday part of your day.
One of the things I've called for is a reduction of the corporate tax so we can bring hundreds of millions of dollars back into the tax base of Maryland by bringing more businesses back here and fewer businesses leaving here.
There's a defining difference in this election on tax policy. I'm not someone that is pushing for corporate tax cuts. I'm going to be the governor for middle-class families.
The voices of Attorney General Doug Gansler and Montgomery County Delegate Heather Mazier last night during the second televised Democratic gubernatorial debate held at Fox 45 WBFF TV studios in Baltimore. The state's gubernatorial primary election is less than a month away. Attorney General Gansler and Delegate Mazier handled questions last night on everything from education to the environment. But notably missing from that debate was Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. He is also a candidate for governor. He was a no-show. An empty podium marked his absence during the telecast. Anthony Brown's no-show didn't faze Doug Gansler, though. He went on attack again over Brown's handling of the botched Maryland health insurance exchange.
The lieutenant governor couldn't quite make it tonight. He couldn't make it in front of the committees that were investigating it. He wouldn't turn over his emails talking about accountability. Right now, he says, we're the leader in healthcare rollout. Well, it's been a national embarrassment. You know, we had 67,000 people enroll, almost all of whom did not enroll on the website, which we paid almost $200 million of taxpayer money to set up. And then the question is, where do we go now? Now they're going to chase good money after bad and go to Connecticut instead of the federal system, which will be free and available tomorrow.
It's Midday Politics this hour on WYPR. 410-662-8780 is our phone number. The phone lines are open. We'd like to hear from you. We'll be talking about the debate last night, also about the gubernatorial campaign generally this hour. A question for you about Anthony Brown not showing up for this debate. What do you think of that? 410-662-8780. You can also send us an email with your comments. I'll be glad to read them on the air. Midday@WYPR.org. And if you're an undecided voter, because the polls have shown us up to this point that there's a lot of undecided voters still. The primary is June 24th. Have you made up your mind? Did you tune in last night to try to make up your mind if you're a Democratic voter voting in the Democratic primary? We'd like to hear from you. Again, the number 410-662-8780. And what did you think of Channel 45's decision to have a lectern or podium there with Anthony Brown's name marked on it, but no Anthony Brown? Joining me in Studio A again to talk Maryland politics is Melissa Deckman, Chair and Professor of Political Science at Washington College. Melissa, nice to have you back on the show with us.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And Barry Raskovar is back, longtime political commentator and observer here in Maryland, who now blogs at politicalmaryland.org. Barry, nice to see you
com.
Again. .com. Why do we always make that mistake? We think you're a nonprofit. politicalmaryland.com.
Well, in a way I am, but not by choice.
Yeah, all right. Well, anyway, go to my question, would you, for a minute on the podium business last night. So you had Gansler, if you were looking at the television, Gansler way over on the left and Mazier way over on the right. Actually, politically, probably you should have swapped them around a little bit. But in the middle, Anthony Brown, a podium with the name Anthony Brown, Lieutenant Governor.
The station, Channel 45, had negotiated to try to get him on the show, and ultimately he decided not to be in this debate. What did you think of the decision to put the empty podium there?
Well, clearly the station management was miffed after all the negotiations that they were stood up by the lieutenant governor, who is the leader in this race. And without him, it wasn't much of a show to write home about. So I think part of it was anger over what Brown did in pulling out, and the fact that they felt that this had to be highlighted in a way. Now, I have to give them credit that after showing the empty lectern initially, they didn't focus a camera on it again. So they made their point, and then they got on with the debate. And I think the moderator, Jennifer Gilbert, did an excellent job asking very pointed questions, and was a very good questioner.
Melissa, I'll go to you on my question. What did you think of that? If you were the station manager there, or the news director, someone involved in making that decision, would you have done the same thing?
Well, I don't want to speak as a news director because I'm a political scientist, but
hypothetical questions. I'm sorry.
I will say this, though. As a political science professor, I'm constantly talking about, in a democracy, you need free and fair elections. And one vital component to a free and fair election is good information. And this was a lost opportunity for Anthony Brown to provide information to voters who were viewing in. So I think that this was a misstep by the Brown campaign. And I don't necessarily disagree with the station's decision to do that. I think it kind of shows you what the Brown strategy is. Maybe it was a smart start strategy. We'll see come June 24th. But at the end of the day, voters lost an opportunity to hear from the leading candidate. And that's a shame.
Okay. Be a political strategist for a minute. Another hypothetical question. What did he have to lose, Anthony Brown? He said his campaign has said that they agreed to three debates, not three televised debates. So there's going to be another televised debate. There's already been one. There's going to be another Channel 11 WBAL TV is carrying that. And then there's going to be a radio debate. But what did he have to lose? That's my question by going to this.
I think he had more to gain than to lose here because it looks as though he's trying to hide something or that he lacks confidence. And because he's being so deliberative in every aspect of his campaign. I think the big thing that he lost here, getting back to Barry's point about the moderator, who I thought did a great job as well. But one thing I was really impressed about was her focus on Baltimore. And this is the only Baltimore-based debate of the whole campaign. And so this has been actually come up as a campaign topic, the fact that you have these three candidates running in the Democratic primary, all based outside of the Washington suburbs. There's a sea shift, I think, in Maryland politics, but this was an opportunity to be in Baltimore, talk about issues of importance to Baltimore voters, and I think he lost out here.
Barry, what about you? What did you think for Brown? What did he have to lose by not showing up for this? By showing up?
What this showed was that his handlers, the people running his campaign, are very, very worried that Anthony Brown is going to slip up if he's exposed to the public. But there's no indication that he's going to do that. He's a very polished campaigner. He's been doing it for 8 years as lieutenant governor. He had very, very little to lose. By not showing up, he did lose. People who were undecided and tuned in basically looked at two of the candidates, and those are the two that they'll decide between. And Anthony Brown will not get the votes. Now, what it says to me is that Brown's handlers have seen polling results that indicate that he is very comfortably ahead, and therefore he didn't have to engage in this debate. And if he lost some votes as a result, it won't hurt him that much.
Okay, well, that leads to my question here. Okay. If that's the reality, to me, it sends the message that I've already won. I don't need to bother. I don't know if other people feel that way. Personally, as I'm sitting at home there on the couch watching this, thinking, why isn't he here? What's he got to lose by showing up here one more time? And he's got another debate he could do. You should do several debates. There should be plenty of debates. But
right.
I already won. I don't have to bother. That's what I get from it.
This is dismissive of the public. The public's right to know. No, not in this case. You know, I'll just deny them the opportunity to hear from me and to hear how I stack up against the other two candidates. It smacks of an arrogance that might be concerning if he is indeed elected. Does this carry over into his governorship. Is there a hubris here that is worrisome, that I don't have to bother with this? The election is over. But from the get-go, Brown has always approached this as a coronation, that I'm next in line. People are satisfied with the O'Malley administration.
I've got all these endorsements.
Yes.
From the whole the Democratic political power structure.
Right. So why even bother with the election? It's a done deal.
And I think, too, there's this theme running through the election right now, and certainly Doug Gansler is trying to promote this theme, is that Brown is part of the establishment and part of the status quo. And on the one hand, in such an overwhelmingly Democratic state, perhaps that'll work in his favor if he does win the primary and he goes on to the general election in the fall. But at the same time, you know, there is a sense of fatigue, I think, with the O'Malley administration among a lot of independent voters, and in fact, among some Democratic voters as well. They're frustrated with tax hikes. They're frustrated of this perception that Maryland is not a good place to do business. So I think there are definitely openings there. But getting back to your earlier point, Dan, I think one other missed opportunity for Anthony Brown by skipping the debate is that it really would give him more of a chance to hone his debate skills, to really get his message better form, because I don't think he's resonating right now necessarily. And I go back to the 2008 Democratic primary, the presidential primary, where you had Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama in that sort of epic battle, right, mm-hmm, for the nomination. Right. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, most people agree that it made Barack Obama a much better candidate in the fall. And so every time Anthony Brown skips these forums or misses the opportunity to debate in issues, you know, it's a chance for him to really hone his skills and to be an even better candidate, I think, in the fall.
One last question for me, and then I want to go to the phone lines. Do you think the candidates, Mazur and Gansler, didn't address his absence enough? Could they have done more with that?
Oh, yes. I think they could have, especially Gansler. Gansler has to knock Brown down a few notches, and he's trying to do it, but it's not been very effective. Between now and June 24th, he has to find a way to eat into the lead. And he can do that really one of two ways. He can go negative, or he can come up with some issues or themes that resonate with voters. Mm-hmm. So far, he has not hit a home run, and that's the problem. In order to overcome the lead, you have to hit some home runs.
410-662-8780. Dan Rodrigues here with Barry Raskovar and Melissa Deckman. We're taking your calls. Open phone lines to talk Maryland politics this hour, reacting to the debate last night. Did you? No, I was going to take a couple of calls. No, we're not ready for that yet. John in Baltimore. We'll go right to you next. Hi, John.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
My reaction is this, and I'm a lifelong Democrat. I think it was on your station yesterday. I heard a term used, useful idiots, all right? And that made me think that he displayed such an arrogance. And you would think that if in my work and in your, if you screwed up a couple times, and we've heard about the health care, and more recently how he decided to support Ulysses. And that, to me, just speaks...
Ulysses Curry?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay.
And that says to me, where is this guy's judgment? These are two big issues that speak to character in a way, because, you know, in the military, the one thing, everybody talks about is military service. Well, in the military, people get relieved all the time at the top of the food chain for work or for non-performance down the chain of command. And they step up and they say, it was my fault. For the life of me, I cannot figure out why, one, he can't say, you know, I really screwed it up. I'm sorry. Can mm-hmm. you forgive me on this?
Yeah, he didn't exactly apologize. But, John, I need to ask you a question. Are you a Democratic voter?
Usually I am.
Well, are you registered right now?
Of course, yes.
Are you an independent or a Democrat?
I am a Democrat.
Okay.
I vote all the time.
Okay, so you vote all the time. All right, so going into this election in just a few weeks, June 24th, where were you last night before the debate? Where are you today?
Well, for me, that's pretty black and white. Before the debate, I was not a Brown fan, and I'm certainly not a Brown man now. Ms. Mazur seems she's different. She seems to have character. Gansler, you know he's smart. But then he goes off and says dumb things.
So where are you, John?
I want to see what the Republican people have.
Well, but are you going to vote in the primary?
Yes.
So who do you think you're going to vote for in the primary?
Right now, my knee-jerk answer to that is Gantz. Right. Mazur.
Oh, Mazur. Okay.
Mazur, I'm sorry. Mazur, yeah. And let me just finish with this comment, and I'll get out of here.
Yeah, sure.
It would seem to me, if I was Lieutenant Governor Brown, and I had screwed up like he has, I would run to an opportunity to display my competence. Let me show him what I got. And the fact that he stayed away yesterday, like I said, we're useful idiots. It just spoke to an entitlement. This just drives me crazy.
All right, John. Thank you. I'll give you that. Here's Denise in Hamden, and then we'll take a short break and take some more calls. Denise, what do you have to say about this?
Hey, Dan.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my
sure.
call. I think that Brown's absence totally speaks for itself, and I don't want to spend any more time talking about Brown, at least not on my call. I'm really just so excited about last night's debate. I had heard my friends talking about the female in the race, Heather Mazur. You got to see this woman talk. She's amazing. She's that. Hadn't had a chance to see her. And last night, I was blown away. I mean, this woman spoke so specifically to the issues. She was steady. She was confident. She really makes me feel like she's going to fight for me. I don't feel before the debate, I was not only undecided, just not happy with what the choice is. And I've made my choice. I'm so excited. I'm telling all of my friends. I've contacted the campaign. I'm volunteering. I'm telling all my friends. I'm telling all my family. This woman, if we're going to have any change in this state, it's going to come from Heather Mazur. I mean, clearly, she was the winner last night. I haven't been this excited to vote, really. I'm this excited about a candidate since, like Barack Obama in 2008. I feel so happy that I have like a good choice to make, in the election. So,
Denise,
I thought Heather won.
All right. Thank you for the call. I appreciate hearing from you on that. Others are welcome to join us. Melissa, what did you think of Heather Mazur's performance last night?
I'd agree with Denise in the sense that I thought Mazur was a strong performer. She continued to improve from last time. I thought the first debate that was televised, she did a good job. She's very clear about what she wants. She's good at articulating her vision. I'm less convinced about how she would pay for all of these wonderful things she wants to do. But clearly, to the Democratic primary voters, I think she's one to watch. I think it's not her year. I think that she's not very well known. I think she's sort of building her name recognition. And she's, in fact, run sort of an unorthodox campaign. She's been relying a lot on volunteer grassroots support. And what's telling, if you look at the financial data that just came out last night about midnight, so all of the campaigns had to report how much they've raised. She hasn't raised as much as Anthony Brown or Doug Gansler, but she has raised a lot of money, enough to qualify for state matching funds and small donations, lots and lots of small donations, which indicates that people are really excited about her. People like Denise.
That speaks to the grassroots
nature of it. It does. So I think she's one to watch in the future. I just think at this point it's probably still a long shot.
Yeah, I think Mazur is in a fight with Doug Gansler to see who finishes second, and that's about the best she can hope for. Last night, in my mind, she came across as a first-term public official would, somebody who's got a lot of new ideas. But when you start to pick them apart, you can see most of them are not realistic or totally thought through. Or Gansler,
or conditioned on the legalization of marijuana, for instance, in one respect, right?
Yes, and to say we've already thought through all of the ramifications, when in fact we haven't even touched the surface on that.
Yeah.
Gansler clearly is a more experienced public official, but at the same time, it's clear from his comments that he hasn't been in a comparable position to being a chief executive. And, he's kind of murky, too, on exactly how you put all the pieces of the puzzle together in running a government. So neither of them really excelled last night, but both of them
were there. Both of them were there.
And that in itself did them good.
Yeah. So I want to ask this question. If you had already decided to vote for Anthony Brown, did this change your mind, the fact that he didn't show up for a debate? 410-662-8780. And again, let's have the music now, John. If you were undecided and you actually tuned in last night for the debate, Did the debate help you make up your mind? We'd like to hear from you. This is Midday Politics. Dan Roderick's here with Barry Raskovar and Melissa Deckman, 410-662-8780. I have a couple of emails to read when we get back. Here's our address, midday@wypr.org. Send us a tweet on MiddayWYPR. Here's an email from Andrea on Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown's decision not to take part in the WBFF televised gubernatorial debate, Democratic gubernatorial debate last night. Andrea says, I can draw only one conclusion from Anthony Brown's refusal to participate in a legitimate and necessary public debate. He is the choice of the Maryland machine. He is going to win, and he feels no need to speak directly to the people or make the case that he deserves our votes. Voter turnout will be low. He has the support of party faithful who will vote in the primary, and he couldn't care less about participating fully in the electoral process. His arrogance does not serve him well when he does appear. So participation has nothing to offer Anthony Brown. His behavior is, in my opinion, disgraceful reflection upon him and Maryland politics. Other comments welcome at midday@wypr.org. What about that statement from Andrea that voter turnout will be low? We're expecting voter turnout to be low. We keep saying this.
I suspect that this could set a record for low turnout.
For
a statewide primary. A number of people who I respect are indicating that that's what they feel is going to happen. And the question is, where is the low turnout going to be most heavily reflected? And chances are that based on past elections, the lowest turnout could well be in Baltimore City and in Prince George's County. Neither have any exciting local races going on. Prince George's County, there's no county executive race, and most of the other
legislative
local
district.
Elections. There are very few that are hotly contested. But the county executive in Prince George's County, Ruchern Baker, has not endorsed a candidate for governor, and he is personally very close to Gansler's lieutenant governor candidate, Jolene Ivey. It could be that you're going to have low turnouts in two of the biggest jurisdictions. There's a hot county executive race in Montgomery County and some other very heated races for county council. So you could have a big turnout in Montgomery County. If those two things come to pass, then the election gets decided possibly where the turnout is at least average or above average. And that could be where people feel a civic obligation to go out and vote. The Eastern Shore, Maryland, Baltimore County, Hartford County.
Okay. So maybe the Baltimore area will matter.
Yes, but they don't have anybody in this race. So these three people are really strangers to most people in the Baltimore area. And that's why you have so many people who say, I'm undecided.
It's going to boil down to name recognition in a lot of cases, too. And so Anthony Brown has a big pot of money that he's sitting on. And in the next month, you're going to see all kinds of advertisements going up on the airwaves. I suspect you're going to see shots of Anthony Brown standing next to Bill Clinton, who endorsed him last week. And so I think that it's going to be one of those elections where it's named by association. He's going to surround himself with all the very popular Democratic officials nationally and statewide who have endorsed him. And so I think it's still his race to lose, frankly.
And in terms of the political calendar, this is a new thing for us, a June primary in Maryland.
It's the first time in a gubernatorial election you've had a primary set in early summer when school is out, when people have already gone to the beach.
Yes.
And now they're not going to vote. So this could be a historically low turnout. And then you have a long gap until November. And then you have an even longer gap from the primary to when the next governor gets sworn in. And we don't know what's going to happen in this interregnum period. This is all new to Maryland.
410-662-8780 is our number here to join our conversation with Barry Raskovar of Political Maryland, politicalmaryland.com, and Melissa Deckman, the chair of the Political Science Department at Washington College. Let's go to Parkville and it's Teddy giving us a ring. Welcome to Midday, Teddy.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm actually from Parkton.
I'm sorry, you're from where?
Yeah, Parkton, Maryland.
Oh, Parkton in Baltimore County. Thank you.
Yeah. You know what? Two things. I am just absolutely disappointed that Anthony Brown decided not to show. I really didn't think that so many people felt the same way I do. I thought that a lot of people would say, you know what, who cares, he doesn't show up, and things like that. That's number one. Number two, I wish that we could get a straightforward, non-political answer from Anthony Brown as to why he didn't show up. Don't go into, oh, we're busy focusing on this, we're busy focusing on that. No, give me a straight, non-political answer as to why you didn't show up. Did you have a previous engagement, or I mean, did you feel that it just wasn't necessary because you got this thing in the bag? You know, I'm just upset. And at first, he was, I'm almost ashamed to say this, he was going to automatically be my bid. I mean, he was going to do it for me. But now I'm really not confident just because he made this one little move, which was to not show up at the debate. And I'm not even a fan of debate. But it just seems like to me he thinks that he has it in the bag. And from what your guests are saying, that is probably correct. So I'm just really upset.
Teddy, I appreciate you calling in to express that. Teddy from Parkton, Maryland, in northern Baltimore County. What about debates generally, Melissa? Do people use them to make up their minds about candidates?
I would say that national studies, when looking at presidential debates, find that they really have very little impact, to be quite honest. I think where they matter is on the margins. If you have a close race, perhaps it could sway someone, and more for missteps than as opposed to having a grand performance. So if a candidate says something that's false or makes a major sort of,
a misstep, they're always worried about that.
That right? Becomes sort of the compelling narrative.
But what about this dynamic in Maryland of a large, based on the last polls I saw, a large number of still undecided Democratic voters, people sort of meh about all the candidates generally, trying to make up their minds whether to vote, try to get excited about a fairly early, you know, the earliest primary we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
What about it? It's still I know we keep saying Brown's the front runner. The polls show that. But there's undecided block.
We keep saying the polls show that. The last public poll.
It's been a while.
Was in February.
I was going to say.
So we don't know what the public is thinking.
Yeah.
But we have a sense that people still are undecided. None of the three are well known, especially in the Baltimore area. And that being the case, anything that gives the public in the Baltimore area a sense of who these people are is important. So the these debates may indeed carry more weight than we think they do, and also the television ads. Unfortunately, none of the TV ads from Gansler or from Anthony Brown have been superlative. They've been mediocre at best. They don't give you a sense of who these people are. That's what every voter wants. They haven't gotten it so far, and I think the confusion may persist right up to Election Day.
Let's take another call on Midday. Dawn in Baltimore, thank you for calling. Go right ahead, please.
Oh, thanks for taking me.
Sure.
I watched the show last night. It was too bad the bag holder in chief wasn't there to defend himself. But I thought Gansler made a couple of excellent points about going to the federal website and not exporting gas from downtown Baltimore. Practically downtown Baltimore. He'd be my vote if I wasn't secretly a Republican. I had to vote for Hillary last time because, like, really, everybody knew that Obama was unstoppable. And this time, if I voted, I guess I would vote for Brown.
You would vote for Brown?
Because he's going to get beat.
I don't follow you, Don. If you voted for Hillary because Obama was unstoppable,
if Hillary
I would think
was
you'd
a
vote for Heather Mazier.
here, my Republican might have had a better chance beating Hillary, but I don't think anybody could beat Obama. In this race, I think anybody can beat Brown.
Oh, I see. I see that. So does it sound like Don wants a Republican to win? I don't know. Let's move on. I wanted to air another clip from last night's debate in case you didn't get to hear it. We chose this one. This was a question about the Cove Point liquefied gas facility, which has been protested by a number of people who don't want to see it, the thing actually be expanded. Moderator Jennifer Gilbert of WBFF asking both the candidates who posted last night, Doug Gansler and Heather Mazier, about that.
Proponents of the expanded Cove Point facility for liquefied natural gas say that it will add jobs, it will add tens of millions of dollars in tax revenue, and really raise Maryland's profile internationally as an exporter. It has the support, for example, of Democratic Congressman Steny Hoyer. Do you support the expansion at Cove Point, Attorney General?
Yeah, so FERC did a study, and we were waiting for the study to make sure that the environmental impact was going to be such that it was, which says that it's safe to build an environmentally friendly way. Cove Point is already there. This is just an expansion. They've already been importing liquefied natural gas. This is just about the ability to export liquefied natural gas. And so now that the report has come back and that it's clean and safe, I think most Marylanders are for it. We need the jobs. If they don't put it here, they're going to put it somewhere else. The people in the community are for it. I think it's important that we continue to bring jobs here to Maryland, to employ people that are otherwise unemployed, and to help the economy. So I think it's great that we're going to be able to go forward with this multi-billion-dollar project.
Delegate Mazier, do you support the expansion at Cove Point?
Absolutely not. Maryland has 3,000 miles of coastline. It makes us more susceptible to harm from the effects of climate change than almost any other state in the nation. We have to make sure that for example, when Hurricane Sandy came through with a 5-foot tidal surge, Chris Field was wiped out practically. We see Smith and Tangier Islands slipping away every day. To build the liquefied natural gas export facility would create more carbon pollution in our state than all 7 of our coal-fired power plants combined. It would turn Maryland into an international sacrifice zone for fracked gas from all over the country. It would increase our tanker traffic, our pipelines, the liquefiers. This would be really bad for the environment. No governor from Maryland can claim to be for addressing climate change and for this Cove Point facility in the same breath.
Okay, Heather Mazier, and before that, Douglas Gansler at the debate last night on WBFF-TV. Of course, Anthony Brown, lieutenant governor, the front runner in the Democratic gubernatorial primary, front runner based on polls from a couple of months ago, was not present last night. I'm going to read a couple of emails here. We'll take a break. We'll come back and take some more phone calls and hear more from Melissa Deckman and Barry Raskovar on Midday Politics. Here's Tom writing to us from Baltimore. He says, I had the benefit of hearing candidates Brown, Gansler, and Mazier at an urban candidate forum. I was impressed by both Gansler and Mazier and absolutely underwhelmed by Brown. The crowd was mainly African-American and responded more warmly to Gansler than to Brown. As a liberal Democrat, I resent the Democratic establishment's high-handed approach to packaging and marketing the robo-candidate. I'm a natural Mazier supporter, but I admired Gansler's obvious passion and his creative ideas. My main concern is that whatever Democrat we choose has to beat a middle-of-the-road Republican, which gives me pause about supporting Heather Mazier. Christopher's comments. Two debates in, and this seems like a very weak Democratic field to me. If anything, last night's debate provided good contrast between the policies of Gansler and Mazier, namely whether to use the federal health care site or rebuild that, build the one we have from scratch. Ultimately, I'll cast my primary vote for Heather Mazier, not that I expect her to win or that she'd be a great governor, but I believe a vote for Mazier will be a way to bolster her positions after the primary ends. It may mean something down the line to say the anti-fracking, pro-legalization candidate got X percent of the vote. Very interesting. And Dan in Chestertown says that Gansler's earlier TV advertisements emphasized a focus on fighting this or fighting that. Now his advertisements are sort of a potpourri of issue buzzwords, and it is obvious to me that he has no idea of how our educational system is struggling with very complex issues. And Harris writes, I believe that Anthony Brown did not participate, not because he is arrogant and confident of victory, but because he is fearful of how poorly he would compare to Gansler or Mazier. And Susan in Mount Washington, how can people complain about the government and then keep on voting for the status quo? I'm a Mazier supporter. She's real. She's honest. She refuses to sling mud. Wow, W-O-W with an exclamation point. A short break here on Midday. We'll come back and talk some more politics. Please give us a ring to join our conversation, 410-662-8780. And welcome back to Midday Politics. Dan Rodericks with Melissa Deckman, a chair of the Political Science Department at Washington College, who joins us from time to time to talk politics, especially Maryland politics, as does Barry Raskovar, who blogs now at politicalmaryland.com. Barry and Melissa, again, thanks for being here. That email about Gansler and education, saying that he fails to grasp how complex the issues facing public education in Maryland and the whole country are. Democratic candidates or Republican candidates, all candidates for governor talk a lot about public education. How much do they influence it?
Well, they can influence it by throwing more money into the education pot. But the truth of the matter is that any Maryland governor has minimal impact on K through 12 education. These are local school board decisions as to how the schools are run.
Well, they've all came out in support of pre-K, expanding pre-kindergarten education.
Right, but none of them have come up with an answer as to how they're going to pay for it. Mm-hmm. So I think this is one of these campaign ideas that gets floated out there. It's a commitment, and then they're going to have a hard time making it a reality.
Let's go to the phone lines and hear some more from our listeners, and I invite Barry and Melissa to comment as we move along here. Ellen, down in Anne Arundel County, giving us a ring on Midday. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. How come no one is focusing on the lieutenant governors? And the reason I ask this is I am old enough to remember John F. Kennedy's assassination, which left us with Lyndon Johnson, Nixon's abdication with which left us with an unelected president, and the problems we had in Maryland 40 years ago with Agnew and Mandel. How come nobody's looking at the person that's a heartbeat away from being the governor?
I think part of the issue is lieutenant governors really don't do much, which again feeds into this problem that Anthony Brown has in terms of what are his accomplishments, right, at 8 years in the O'Malley Brown administration. But that's a very fair point. We don't really hear much about what's going on with lieutenant governors. I think it's interesting the choices that each of the candidates have made. I felt that Ken Ullman from Howard County was actually going to pose a real threat in terms of running for governor himself, but quickly sort of got on board with the Brown machine.
Right. I
think Ivy is an interesting choice for Doug Gansler.
Mm-hmm.
She's a state delegate, has an interesting following in Prince George's County. She's African American and also brings some gender balance to the ticket. I think that Heather Mazier's choice was probably the most unconventional. Picking a minister is something that doesn't really happen every day.
Coates.
And
right.
With really no government experience. So I think it's actually a weak choice in a lot of respects. But she's, of course, trying to be the unconventional candidate.
Right.
It's fascinating that yesterday nobody in the Baltimore area could see this, but there was a debate among the three lieutenant governor candidates.
Just yesterday
morning. On a cable news station.
And Barry watched it?
And Barry did not watch it.
Because you live in this area.
Right. But the Washington Post and the Sun had brief articles about this debate. And it was a cable station in the Washington area. Its studio is in Northern Virginia. So the debate took place outside the state.
I'm sorry to laugh. At least they're doing it. Whether they're doing it, that's, I shouldn't laugh at it.
Well, yeah. Most of the viewers may well have been also outside of the state, so they couldn't vote.
Yeah.
But Jolene Ivey, Gansler's number two on the ticket, went harshly after Lieutenant Governor Brown. And it's the first time we've heard that from anyone.
Hmm.
She called him a failed leader. She criticized him for his divorce. And she also criticized him for sending his children to private schools and then talking about the need to improve public schools. This is the type of thing that we may see more of it if indeed the polls show that Brown has a very large lead. The only way you can cut into it is to go negative.
And could Gansler put Jolene Ivey in a place with greater exposure to hear her say more of those things?
Sure, he definitely could. This was a fascinating debate that virtually no one listened to.
I wonder if we should do that. You know, we're planning a whole week. Just a note to our listeners, we're planning a whole week of one-on-one interviews with the gubernatorial candidates, Democrat and Republican, in the week before the primary. Each of them will be here for an hour. We'll also have a debate of the Democratic Attorney General candidates. They'll all three of them be in our studio. But we're going one-on-one with each of the gubernatorial candidates a second time because we've already done it once with all of them since last fall.
The problem with the lieutenant governors is, as Melissa pointed out, they're powerless. They have zero power under the Constitution and under the statutes of Maryland. They do nothing. So what they have become is just parrots of the governor. And they basically spend their time making speeches that echo exactly what the governor says. So they have no new ideas of their own to throw out.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Welcome our listeners into the conversation again. Scott in Harford County, thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm calling in to say, I live in rural Harford County, lifelong Democrat, though. And I have heard both Gansler and Heather Mazur, I believe both, surely Gansler on your show, and I think Mazur on your show,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Have never heard much from or about Brown, and was kind of hoping that would things would clear up some with the debate. So he's really kind of set himself back. But my impression going in, I like both the creativity and intelligence of the two that I'd heard. Always thought Mazur's probably a little too far out there to be viable. And Gansler, you made the point earlier that I recognize lack of, I guess you call it executive experience. But on the other hand, with Brown, I don't know what we've got. I know I've always had the impression he was being packaged up and put in these nominal positions as head of the health care initiative and so on, which I guess had sort of blew up. But the guy is nowhere with me at the moment. Right now, if I had to vote today, I'd vote for Gansler.
Thank you very much, Scott. I appreciate that call. Walter in Baltimore, we'll go to you next. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, Dan.
Hi.
I'm an old South Baltimore fellow, part of the old machine in my 60s, mm-hmm. coming out of McGurk's old organization.
Harry Soft Shoes McGurk.
You got it. Yeah. Well, you and I have talked before over in Pigtown, but I won't mention that. But one of the things
you
that
just
happened,
did, Walter.
last night, not from, I would have been voting with the machine. Just, I'm a Democrat lifelong, not liberal particularly, but that old style. And I have to tell you, I'm voting for Mazur. And maybe her idea is a little bit way out, but because she won't be able to really initiate all of them, at least there'll be discussions and new talk. So I literally changed my vote last night, and a lot of the fellows I talked to in the different establishments for beveraging, have said the same thing.
All right, let me ask you this. Say we were in a bar on Ford Avenue, and I'd ask you this question next. We're on the radio, so be careful what you say. I said, say Heather Mazur does win. Say she won the Democratic primary. How do you think she'd fare against a sort of middle-of-the-road Republican candidate like David Craig or maybe Larry Hogan?
Well, Craig, I don't know. Hogan, I think that it would be close, but I think it would still be a Democratic victory. A lot of people that wanted to change, when we voted for the last Republican governor, that didn't last too long, and that's what brought, O'Malley in. I think that, the Democrats themselves have realized that even if they're upset with what the Democratic Party might be, if we put a Republican in, the problem is that every time we get a Republican in there, that we tend not to do too well in terms of who we are as a state.
Yeah.
So I think she would win. I think I think it's going to be a Democratic governor regardless of which of the three win this time.
Let me ask you that question. Yes. It's a hypothetical.
Yes, hypothetically, if Heather Mazur was the choice of the Democratic Party, what you would have would be a split Democratic Party. There are any number of leading Democratic political leaders who would not go with Heather Mazur because she's just too far to the left, way, way, way to the left. Mm-hmm. And they disagree with her on a host of issues and feel she is nowhere near ready to be governor of the state. And if the Republicans nominated a middle-of-the-road candidate, and for them, middle-of-the-road is really pretty conservative.
Yes.
But David Craig is highly respected in the state legislature. He served in the House and in the Senate, highly respected by Democrats in both chambers. I think you would have a very close contest between Craig and Mazur.
I think a Mazur victory would be the best chance that a Republican would have to win the election. You know, Marylanders are not necessarily in favor of legalizing marijuana, certainly not to pay for universal pre-K. And I think that they would balk at having a living wage because it was a tough battle to get the minimum wage hiked to $10, which is going to take a couple years to put into place. Her views are very progressive. They excite a lot of people on the in the Democratic base. But at this point in time, I think that she would be not unelectable. I think it would be a good fight, but I think that the Republicans, this is their best scenario if she were to win the primary. I think you would have you would have Republicans uniting behind whoever won. You'd have a lot of national money being poured into this race, which is not going to be happening necessarily now. So I think the Republicans, that is their best case scenario.
Here's an email from Philip in Towson who says, I'm a supporter of Delegate Mazur, but I'm an independent who will be unable to vote in either primary. After speaking with Democrats who like her ideas, I understand why some of them are hesitant to vote for her. Were she to become the Democratic candidate, a Republican candidate would have a very real chance of winning. There you go, Melissa. Maryland's Democrats are not a unified bloc, Philip goes on. Plenty of them voted for Robert Ehrlich in 2002, and those same Democrats clustered in Southern Maryland, the Eastern Shore, Western Maryland, would likely defect and vote for a moderate Republican like Charles Lawler. Charles Lawler is quite over there on the right, okay? I mean, we're talking about moderate Republican, David Craig, Larry Hogan.
That's about it.
Ron George.
Ron George. Yes.
But
yep.
Charles Lawler, distinctly over there on the right.
Yes.
Delegate Mazur may very well be a victim of her own honesty, Philip says. Len, in East Baltimore, we'll go to you. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Dan. Yes, I like Helen Mazur. I can't say her last name.
It's Mazur. Well. Mazur.
Mazur.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she seemed like she was bright on the stage. I mean, she lit up better than Gansler. And I kind of like her, you know, because when you had her on your show, yeah. I know she has a whole lot of ideas that she wants to do. And it may not come to fruition. But she did real well to me.
Yeah. All right, Len. So you made up your mind last night?
I made up my mind weeks ago.
Okay.
And I just felt that she was the stronger of the three.
Okay. And quickly, we'll go to Mark. Thank you, Len. We'll go to Mark in Catonsville and tell Mark we only have about 30 seconds for your comment. Thanks.
Okay. I'll be quick. I'm a member of a Democratic club in Catonsville, and we had all three of them in the past year, past six, 7 months. And after that, Mazur got 74% in our endorsement. Another club, they gave her 61%. The base, if they have a chance to see her, is very impressed. I think it's possible she could be a sleeper, particularly if somebody slips up.
Well, we'll see. We'll keep you posted. We'll stay on it all the way through the primary, June 24th, and we'll have Barry and Melissa back with us again for sure. Barry Raskovar of PoliticalMaryland.com. You can find a link to his blog on the Dan Roderick's Facebook page. And Melissa Deckman from Washington College. Always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll get you all back together because there's going to be a lot of politics to talk about between now and June 24th. So thank you for your contributions, your phone calls, and your emails in this hour of the show. We have another hour of midday coming up ahead. Right now, we'll take a break for lunch and the news from NPR for lunch. Lunch today provided by Breathe Bookstore Cafe. Breathe Bookstore Cafe serves vegetarian, vegan, and gluten-free savories, sweets, coffee, tea, juices, and more. They're open 7 days a week, located over there on the Avenue, 36th Street, Hun, in Hamden. See you for the second hour.